I mean, I was not a policeman.
I don't know, but I mean, private investigator might be worse than a policeman.
Alabaster kept that one real quiet for the last 2 years. He's like, you know what? It's a little hot out here right now. Probably going to stop telling people this.
Oh, man. Are you going to tell the world? We're here now. They're wondering. Like,
yeah, I'm still wondering. Like, what did you investigate?
Right. Only crime.
Only crime dogs.
Do you guys want the real story? Is that I pretty much just looked at people's resumes, and that was the background checks I would do for executive hire.
For people that weren't listening before we did the whole intro to this debate show, non-debate show, we have discovered today through our conversation about trench coats that apparently Alabaster was for a year in his life a private investigator. And I'm not going to lie, it still feels like he's not divulging the whole truth to us, which would be very on brand.
As I did before.
No.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like playing down what he was doing, and he's trying to, but I feel like there's like a black water of private investigators like internship that he was running. Like I don't trust this guy at all. Man,
it was a really exciting pre-show. So that's Pablo. I'm Dominique. That is Go Joe. The pre-show also we discovered that McGruff the crime dog actually a criminal. Like you thought the whole time that he was trying to fight crime, and it was right there in front of you. His name is McGruff the crime dog, not McGruff the anti-crime dog. And also he has on a trench coat. Name another person in all of the world that has a trench coat and is up to good. They are always no good.
First off, if he was McGruff the sex dog, no one would be like, man, that dog hates sex. Yeah. It's a great point about the construction of the whole branding.
All right. We had playoff games. I imagine the first topic, let me guess, I didn't look at the email, but it probably is Cowboys.
Good private investigation, Dominique. Yeah.
Fantastic investigative work. We got to get you a trench coat. First topic. No. Who deserves the most blame for how the Cowboys season ended?
Stephen A. Smith.
I mean, that sort of informs how I feel about this question right now, because we just had him at his, like, apotheosis. He ascended into heaven and beamed celestial light from all of his orifices and disintegrated Michael Irvin and everybody else in the city of Dallas and the state of Texas. And I kind of want to, I mean, number one, I feel bad for Dominique, the foremost Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
I can't say simp, so I have to say Stan, but Dak Prescott, Stan. So
we do this every time and
you
say simp still.
Yeah. Like, I've called Pablo out this on this privately, where I was like, you need to stop using this right-wing podcast strategy of saying, I can't say this, and only to like sneakily say what you feel like you can't say. They're going to cancel me if I call them what they really are. Like, just stop saying simps.
It's the Dan Le Batard trick of not saying it, but just saying, I'm asking the question. I'm not actually saying this. I'm just asking the question.
Oh, man.
I respect society's norms.
I'm just telling you to think.
That's right. I respect the boundaries that have been placed around me, even though I'm a warrior for freedom. So Gojo, what I actually kind of want to do is take the opposite sort of version of this question. Can we try and help the Cowboys? Can we try and do some like Baghdad Bob, speaking of misinformation campaigns? Can we try and spin this in a way that like blames anybody but the people on this team?
I think to be fair to Mike McCarthy, he's getting a lot of blame today, but Mike McCarthy managed to call three timeouts before halftime and try to force a punt in a situation that he had a similar situation against the Eagles earlier in the season. He blew that. We ripped him for it. 2 weeks ago, Mike McCarthy got to the end of game situation and had wasted a timeout because the Cardinals ran on the field, or the Cardinals left their offense on the field in a situation where the Cowboys started going to field goal. This game, the Cowboys had three timeouts in a late game situation. Mike McCarthy, the saddest part of this is Mike McCarthy has gotten better at clock management. This was like peak McCarthy clock management right now. So we just need to give him one more offseason to then figure out the rest of this foolishness. It's true.
See, Gojo, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to blame how this game ended, which of course was so horrific that we decided to like entirely ignore the fact that like we've seen some of the best offensive games in the history of sports as a result of it. I want to point out that I think, speaking of like cancel culture, I think the softness of football is responsible for why this game wound up this way. I blame the fact that the referee, because of player safety, the umpire in specific, is now positioned that much further behind, right? Oh, the offensive line. They used to be on the other side of the trenches, as you people like to call them, right? He used to be there, but all these crossing routes and stuff, people were getting concussed. So they said, hey, we got to get the umpire away from this. And because of that player safety initiative, Dak Prescott could not get another playoff. I blame the softening of the American mind. Yes.
Go ahead, Gojo. I have to say, on a wild card weekend, you have drawn us into the foolishness a little too soon. This is my opinion. Gojo.
That was pretty, pretty amazing. I don't know, like, whittling this down to its simplest form here, it probably has to fall on Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy, and Jerry Jones, right? Like, every part of this was about how this team was constructed overall here, who you put in charge of it, and what that was reflected in, the most penalized team in football being their most penalized in this game. And then Dak Prescott, who was paid $40 million a year, who was not able to go and elevate his team beyond their circumstances. And ultimately, when you look around at how these teams are structured, the guys who are paid the most, especially at the critical positions, are out there to be special when the rest of your team cannot be. And listen, the Cowboys' offensive line, especially at left guard, got their asses whooped in this game consistently by the 49ers. And so what does that do? When you pay a quarterback all that money, we expect you to be Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. And when you're not, we're going to look at you side-eye. So it's not to say Dak didn't deserve that money. It's not to say that this team wasn't well-constructed in certain ways, but it's to say when it mattered most of the things that you had set up failed you, and that's on the three people that I just mentioned.
Yeah, well, Patrick Mahomes, when he doesn't get protection, we saw in the Super Bowl last year, when it's putrid, he's also mortal. But Dak Prescott can't wake up on Sunday morning and decide to be 6'8". And built like a tank, which is what Josh Allen is. So I do think that Dak deserves some criticism, mostly for the interception, not necessarily for the in-game mechanics as much. But I do think you didn't mention Kellen Moore. Like, Kellen Moore deserves the criticism also. He's the one who called the play. So in those situations, we used to practice this all the time. I was on defense, so I just learned by listening that Mike Shanahan used to always say, you need 14 seconds to be able to run a play and get up and spike it and run a second play. So that was right at the number that they had. However, that's the assuming that there's a throw in that situation. The ball will travel much faster than a runner. So there's a throw up there. And then someone who is used to being in that situation, a receiver, has probably been trained 1,000 times. You pick it up and you hand it to the official. But since they ran a draw, which would take longer time to get down there, and since the ball carrier was a quarterback, someone who is never in that position at that time of game, I think that was part of the problem. So that falls on Dak for sure, because you also need to know on the back end, you need 2 seconds in order to spike the ball. Yep. So say all this stuff doesn't work out, you get to the line, you're Dak Prescott, you notice that there is not enough time for you to spike the ball. Whatever your communication is, they need to know at this time that we're not going to spike. We have to go to the end zone. So, yes, everyone deserves blame for this. You can put up my Culligan man, who is racially ambiguous, apparently, and say I'm carrying water if you want to. But I think of it more as properly distributing the water. Dak deserves some water carried. Everyone else deserves some water poured on them.
Alabaster, just because I, too, learn by listening, I just want to point out, I think Dominique blamed God for Dak Prescott not being taller also in the midst of that
day. Listen,
it's on him.
If he's going to get all the credit, it's like a quarterback. He should get some of the blame, too.
I know you've seen those TikTok videos where people are like pouring, saying, pretending that God is making them. And it's like, oh, I got a little bit of this. Just a touch of abs. Well, not for me. I got a full cup of them things. Rats.
Sick brag, bro. So do you still think he's better than Tom Brady?
Dominic,
he has not been better than Tom Brady this year. I resent the fact that we're talking about this now. We're not talking about it after I wrote an article and that he went out and played just as well or better than Tom Brady. I do think that the difference between them, which I said in the article I wrote, is red zone efficiency. That's a big deal. The difference, the only statistical noticeable difference between them in recent seasons has been that Tom Brady is more efficient in the red zone, which matters. So, yeah, Tom Brady's better.
I will say this too, like, because we're going to focus a lot on Dak Prescott and the quarterbacks, is also the one other thing that really popped to me, and this is more like I want to take a moment to celebrate what an absolute mutant god Deebo Samuel is.
Yes.
The Cowboys don't really have a dynamic playmaker on offense.
I'm sorry. It was like arousal and fear at the same time.
And that's what it should be. It should be equal parts fear, but also like
erotic panic.
I kind of want you to hurt me type thing. Like,
I didn't know I was into this until you did it.
Yeah, it was,
and now I'm into it.
Yeah. That was a really guttural, wonderful noise. But like, to that point, there is nobody on the Cowboys' offense that's going to make Dominique make that noise.
No.
Like CeeDee Lamb is, I think, close. Like, he's been interesting, but like, there's no one. Dominique, you as a defender, like, you always go to. Yeah.
I mean, I think the tough thing about Deebo Samuel is he is such a good running back and also such a good receiver. So if you're a team like the Cowboys who specialize in man coverage, you're going to want to have your best corner on Deebo Samuel. But if they put Deebo in the backfield, you want to keep your best corner on him, right? That means your corner has to now go play linebacker. And it's not your corner has not have, even if he's big enough and strong enough to contend with guards or contend with fullbacks or tight ends, he doesn't have the reps of it. So you could see a cornerback in there at the mic situation because Debo's back there. And then the cornerback's going to have to fend off a center, a guard, and also watch the pulls and understand that their gap responsibility has changed because of a pull. This is stuff that linebackers practice daily throughout a camp and still mess up on occasion. Throw a corner in there, and let's say you're like, no, we're not going to let you run with Deebo on us. Let's leave our linebackers in there. Okay, good luck covering Deebo, or we'll just run it, and he'll still, like, they'll do that fake toss counter business. You'll all over-pursue because no one really runs that, and he'll cut it back. And let's say you get there, you cover it right. He's still tough to tackle. Like, there's something about him yesterday that it felt like in that moment, he went from being a darling of football fans to like a real legitimate, like, national star that people will know and talk about going into next season. Like, random people at the supermarket are going to be like, that Deebo Samuel sure is good.
And the cashier will respond.
That's the only way that you can respond. And, clearly, you've never been scared and aroused at the same time, because that's not what it sounds like.
So both scary and arousing, of course, is the 49ers, like, rushing attack in general. 169 yards, the second most the Cowboys gave up all season. And for me, as a normie who watches this stuff and does really, like, find myself into what they do, that does feel like a kink I want to subscribe to. Uh-huh. Like, all of the motion stuff. Can you guys explain, like, what's different about the Niners? Because they do a lot of stuff that feels decorative, but apparently is also incredibly effective. Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, what they do that no one else seems to also understand.
I think it's not that, it's that they do something that no one else does in the modern NFL. So you are preparing and you see, like, linebackers like Fred Warner on their team or Darius Leonard. These guys are like big box safeties in the 90s. And now they have to play linebacker in a league that is focused on speed. And so the 49ers come out in a league that's focused on speed and athleticism. And they're like, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to bludgeon you. And this is, it's once or twice a year you play the 49ers or the Eagles, and that's about it. Oh, the Ravens. And you're like, hey, this week we got to play 1950s football. And then sometimes you're going to get some weird play actions, double post or post corner moves to attack you deep. It's just, I was thinking this yesterday when I was watching the game, and I tweeted it out, that it feels like coaches, offensive coaches, spend all week cooking up fancy third down plays, and they just can't wait. They're like, hey, we're going to get them in third down and watch what we do. Whereas Kyle Shanahan, it appears to me, he spends all week cooking up first down plays. And he's like, I don't ever want to see the number three, except for when we're in the red zone. He loves field goals for some reason. But I never want to see the number three on those little placards on the sideline. And he just trying to win on first and second down. That's when you see the freaky stuff. That's when he, you know, the little categories on the side, that's when he scrolls all the way to the bottom. And he gets the real weird ones on first and second down. He's not at the top with y'all. He's at the bottom.
Well, and
he's going incognito mode and then scrolling.
Yeah. I can say, he clears his browser history regularly after first and second down because Then he gets. That's why, to Dominique's point, he'll get into certain situations and then have to kick field goals because he already got through all that. He made sure to clear the cachet, clear the cookies, all that stuff because he didn't want any parts of it. It's also like the bedrock of what they do is so simple. And like to the original question, the reason, because I have people ask all the time, why doesn't everyone just do motion and all of this? Like, it requires a certain level of football intelligence that I think comes from the basis of the Shanahan offense is run and cut zone, which is the easiest play to run in install and the hardest to execute against a ton of looks. It's why in those offenses, you really only have like two or three base runs and you rep them over and over and over again because it's about being able to respond to situations, different looks that people give you. And so then once you've got that as the bedrock, then you can go off that and do all these fun little wrinkles that are really predicated on your quarterback and skill players being smart because nothing's really changing up front for what we do on the line. Like, we've got tools for a given situation that we go out there and execute with based off that foundation. Then it's, you've got a bunch of really smart Deebo Samuels, running backs like Elijah Mitchell, Kyle Juszczyk, who we know Shanahan's paid a mint to keep there and continue to keep there. Because the other part of this is, and this has been true for Kyle going back to Atlanta, big skill position players, when you've got difference makers at those spots, it changes the way you can do all this. It completely changes the calculus. Because to Dominique's point, it makes such weird math problems for how you want to go and sub on defenses when you can keep George Kittle and Juszczyk out there, have them do a million different things here, and then approach every situation like that, knowing we can do the simplest thing, but we've also got enough guys that understand this offense and have been in it for a long time that can go and then do all these high-level wrinkles that mess everybody up.
That's an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about that you bring out there. He's not only distributing the workload, but he's distributing the cognitive load very wisely in that I'm not going to ask 11 people to learn something new every play. I'm going to ask one person to learn 11 different things. And I imagine that they spend lots of time repping those things with that one person or going through meetings with that one person and also trusting that he is someone you can rely on. He is fully committed. And that's an interesting way to think about it because we think of putting in a wrinkle as putting in something that the opponent has never seen before. So we're going to do everything different. When actually, you just got to change one thing when that guy is important. And they have three guys in Juszczyk and Kittle and Deebo Samuel. And I guess Brandon Ayuk to some extent. They have three to four guys who have such an array of talents that he can be like, you know what? We're going to put him out here this week. And that is something that either you didn't prepare for or we did it last week. And now you're going to have to spend all week preparing for that. You know what? It wasn't that hard for us to install. It's not that hard for us to pull out. And now you're stuck in a whole game where you're focused on figuring out what Kittle's going to do. And I don't think they threw it to him, but what? Like, how many targets did he have yesterday? Like, it's such an interesting equation that he's able to throw out there every week, but he still got cowardly in those fourth down decisions and shriveled up towards the end of the game.
Yeah, what's going on? What's going on with this? Is it just the postseason and it turns out that like that's a very different, speaking of cognitive situations, a very different cognitive situation in the playoffs as Dominique is now refreshing his VMix for us and he looks very handsome frozen, as he will tell you if you were to ask him how he looked. But is it just the fact that like, you know, it's scarier now to make and take risks?
Yeah.
What's going on? Why isn't Kyle Shanahan doing the Kyle Shanahan stuff on fourth down?
I don't know that Kyle Shanahan – I haven't looked at Kyle Shanahan's numbers throughout the year, but I've always seen Kyle Shanahan as a fake new wave coach. It's like we talk about him like a new offensive coordinator.
I did just group him with everybody else. That's right.
Yeah, like because he is young-ish and
he's a flat brim cap.
Yeah, and he's had some success offensively. We're like, man, he's one of these analytics new wave guys. But nothing about Kyle Shanahan. Again, I'm not sure what his fourth down numbers are, but my guess based on the way that he's like designs his offense is Kyle Shanahan. Yeah, he was raised by Mike. Kyle Shanahan is a 90s coach in a 2020s coach body.
I like that he's like a Freaky Friday with like Mike McCarthy potentially where like, and I love to pull there. I need to pull like some old coach's fourth down numbers and see if we had like a Freaky Friday combine urinal situation with him and Kyle Shanahan where now Kyle Shanahan truly just is an old coach? Because I don't know the answer to that. Like, to your point, it is a lot scarier. And to Dominique's point, it's interesting to think about this just like mentally. Taking risks on early downs is relatively low stakes because you've got three more of them after first down. So it would make a ton of sense to say, yeah, this dude lives to get freaky on first and second, but then third and fourth, when the chips are down, might turtle shell a little more, especially when your quarterback is Jimothy Garoppolo, who, you know, we saw varying degrees of the experience yesterday.
Jimmy G, did he have a...
I like the idea that Kyle Shanahan is just Mike McCarthy, if Mike McCarthy, like, left the sticker on his baseball cap on.
It's I like, think there's a few other differences.
Guy. Alabaster?
I have a question about McCarthy. Do you think the Cowboys have to move on to sort of take the next step? Should they fire him now, or, like...
It does feel, guys, like they need to make a blood sacrifice. Like, there must be some sort of reckoning, and... That is the guy that seems like the most obvious choice. Jerry Jones, after the game, was talking about how he has never been so disappointed as the owner of the Cowboys, which when you have, you know, won fewer playoff games in the last, like, two decades, then of guys, it's like Kaepernick, it's like a I feel like Derek Anderson might be on there, spiritually, if not literally. But, yeah, it's just – I feel like McCarthy has to go on that level.
I do love that Jerry Jones doesn't get out of this scot-free either, though, because we rarely see instances like we're normally for him as the GM there. We talk about some of the personnel stuff, but even this palace that he built caught strays yesterday. You had the punt hit the screen in the middle of the game. You had them talking on the broadcast and showing us that glaring sunspot in the middle
of the field that
Jerry refuses to cover up with shades. Like Fox. Jerry as the owner and grand poobah of this thing. Also got indicted yesterday in the middle of this. Because, Pablo, to your point, I think they're going to fire Mike McCarthy. I don't know if they have to. Like, them being the most penalized team in football and being clearly unprepared for some critical moments yesterday is not a ringing endorsement of the head coach who eventually the buck stops there with. But to the point we've talked about in all of this, some of this is bad bets on contracts in certain spots, guys that missed their window of the prime of their career on those contracts. So, you're going to probably do it, but I'm not going to sit up here and say that, like, it's the thing that's going to elevate them potentially to the next level. Because if they do, they're probably going to replace him with Kellen Moore, who, to Dominique's earlier point, didn't look all that spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, I think based off the preseason expectations,
Can you also not hear Dominique right now? Or is that
I can't hear Dominique either.
Oh, man.
Very good.
All right, I was really like that one I thought had me caught up.
I thought he was running a bit, and I was like, is Dominique doing a bit? Because Dominique, by the way, has inherited his Ben Simmons. Like, that's the subplot in all of this. Is like, what happened to me with the Sixers and Ben Simmons has happened to Dominique.
Wow.
We are now wearing these men around our necks like albatrosses. Oh, there he is.
There we go. I fixed it, guys.
Good job.
I'm not like you. I actually learn and improve, something that you have not been able to do. But I think given the preseason expectations for this team, it's hard to be hard on Mike McCarthy, but those expectations changed. And then he has had enough reason, I think, to move on from him. Using this game alone, I think, would be unfair because the special teams debacle, I don't – we've gotten past that because there was so much other stuff. But I'll just break it down quickly
What was that?
Yeah.
So they call a fake punt, which is a genius thing to do because it works and they get a first down. All's well and good at that point. But then Mike McCarthy, they leave out their punt unit – on the field for first down. And I would say that there's a larger, like, chess, not checkers thing here, but it results in the clock running out and a penalty.
What's
and at that point,
checkers?
It's like, what?
Tic-tac-toe?
Yeah.
No, tic-tac-toe is not as...
Like, the reason why you would do something like that, a hurry-up situation, is because you would like to catch the defense off guard, or if you, if you run the your offense out there and their punt defense is out there, then you have an advantage. However, you do not have an advantage when your punt team is out there and their regular defense is out there because they were in safe. Like, they were not looking to get a punt block. So why do that hurry up and then stand around and wait and try to blame it on somebody celebrating? Like, that is not true. That's just false. That's not the reason why that happened. The reason why it happened is because rather than running your punt team off the field, the reason why the play worked before is you caught them by surprise. The surprise is gone. It's first down. What are you doing? Like, that makes no sense.
Like, it was crossfire. Such, is crossfire dumber than checkers? Where you just, like, shoot the balls as fast as you can.
You'll get caught up in the crossfire.
Crossfire.
Oh, crossfire. Man. What a great commercial.
Games.
By the way, great. Like, what an awful bit of execution on both parties. Because to Dominique's point, they had the punt safe team out there, and the corner just decided, nah, I'm good. I'll be the one guy that doesn't come to work on this play and give it up. Yeah. And then Dallas turns around and erases their advantage. It was like there was enough ineptitude by both staffs down the stretch where I said the fourth quarter of that game was an affront to like execution of football at the highest level to everyone involved. Like, it was really bad across the board.
For the podcast audience, Dominique just used his hand to imitate. I believe a sphincter would be the actual.
No, I was making a fist for Black Power. Oh. Happy Martin Luther King Day, people.
Can't wait to see all your quotes.
I do love the chair. Why does no one ever pick the more radical MLK quotes? Like, Martin Luther King had some really radical speeches that took on, like, capitalism, and it was, like, actually called white
and
people
moderates.
To task. And somehow every Martin Luther King Day, we march out these whitewashed quotes that say a whole lot of nothing about just holding hands. They're like, man, that MLK, we love him. Actually, if you really read what he stood for and you understand that J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI were like actively trying to destroy him, you would feel a little bit different about your MLK milquetoast tweets about dreams.
So should I unretweet the FBI's tweet today? Should
FBI. That is...
Amplified that?
Wait, that's real?
Yes.
Yes. No.
They do it regularly, apparently. I think that it's like taunting is what they're doing. It's like when you sack Aaron Rodgers and you do the discount double check. That is what the FBI is doing by sending out a tweet on MLK Day. It's like, hey, yes. Discount double check.
And what all of America should do is discount double check their history books because it's messed up.
All right. I think we are not going to succeed in our goal to do an entire show on the Cowboys. It feels like maybe we should go to the next time.
But by the way, can I just say one more thing on the Cowboys front?
Yes,
I was
please.
So proud of Stephen A. Smith waiting with bated breath for his post-game video. But then to see that Stephen A. still had his Christmas tree and his stockings up brought me a great deal of joy. Stephen A., truly man of the people.
Yeah, we still have our stuff up here. It's not by my choice, but apparently it's in these very dark times. It makes a very important person in my house feel a little bit happier. So this tree might be up till March, April, who knows?
Alabaster.
It's now an MLK tree. It's a Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, good rebrand. Yeah. Good rebrand.
We got to knock all the ornaments off.
The arc of the holiday universe bends towards keeping
instead of Christmas carols, it's just lift every voice on repeat.
Man, I get so frustrated, man. Oh, I get so frustrated. We're watching those games, and then they roll out these guys like, hey, this dude's just like Martin Luther King. And then one of these players is like, man, reading's important. Like, all right, fine. I don't know. Oh gosh! And then we have to deal with these halftime shows. My goodness, they don't say anything. I don't watch them normally because we normally have Red Zone, and now all of a sudden we're listed to these ridiculous halftime. I'm sorry. What's next, Alabaster? I'm gonna go on a fireable tangent right now. Hold on. Oh, we didn't even talk about the best part of the game. I'd almost forgotten.
What?
Speaking of fireable tangents, when Tony Romo and Jim Nantz. The camera went to Roger Goodell in the box, and Roger Goodell was sitting next to a man who was obviously Hall of Famer Tim Brown, and you could feel
Notre Dame's own.
Feel how nervous both of those guys were because apparently, I'm assuming they said in their ear, like, this is Roger Goodell, and then they both saw that next to him was Tim Brown, but they was like, man, we can't confuse our blacks. Let's just lay off because Romo starts with, hey, who's that guy? He's trying to put Nance on the spot. and Nance was like, Roger Goodell? That is just silent. And eventually, I'm assuming someone got in Romo's ear. I was like, yeah, you're good. You got the right black guy. Go for it. Because eventually, Romo's like, and Tim Brown. It amazed me. I thoroughly enjoyed that. It was my favorite call of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how Romo affected the Don Pardo SNL introduction voice. And Chris Kattan, Tim Brown.
It was so nervous. It was. He went for it. It was fourth and one, and he was like, "Man, we are gonna go for it." I don't know what's gonna happen, but I'm happy he did. I don't know what would have been better if they never actually like said Edison Brown.
Yes,
but I also enjoyed the release of. When I noticed that they weren't going to say anything, I was like, are they going to say nothing? And then Tony Romo was like, Tim Brown. I was like, yes! You did it, Tony. You did it.
Oh, man. They know how to build the tension. That's why those guys are worth tens of millions of dollars, because they built that tension.
Would it have been better if they just went away from the shot and then came back after the commercial break? Like, oh, we neglected to mention it. Tim, then they go back to the shot. Tim Brown's here also. Like, I don't know. That might have been more fun.
I like the notion that would have the same effect as Tirico and Drew Brees going back 15 minutes later and talking about the whistle in their game. God. Where it's like, by the way, Tim Brown, like, the league office called and said, Tim Brown's also in that booth, and he is having a great time.
Hold on. Clear out. I got one for you, Pablo. Erroneous Negro instead of erroneous whistle. No, you can't laugh at this. You can't. Good job, Gojo. Proper move. Pablo, pull it together on MLK Day. And they were scared to name the black man.
I'm saluting for the podcast audience deference.
and we got to do better.
Oh, I feel like you should have put up the tangent. That was the perfect opportunity.
I don't know if he would have been tan.
Then cut my face out and put it onto his. Yeah.
Oh gosh. All right.
All right. More football. What are you more confident in after this weekend?
I'm spent, guys. I think I'm done. I unloaded the clip
This is a refractory period.
You guys have fun. You have fun. I need to recover.
So Gojo, let me ask it to you this way, as Dominique, regains his stamina. What noise would you make if Josh Allen walked into the room where you're sitting right now? If Dominique gave us the Debo erotic panic, what is Josh Allen panic, awakening in you?
Erotic, by the way, erotic panic, great band name. It would probably something.
Joke. I love it. It never gets old. It never gets old.
It plays now. We got a few in the right white reservoir that we can always go to.
I love that one though. I do like that one. It always works.
It does. It works. I mean, I use it pretty much every time I'm on this show, and you guys being great teammates are very giving of laughter, whether or not it's actually funny or not.
But you don't know what we're laughing at. It's always funny to me. The reason, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, listen, my delicate white sensibilities just need laughter to keep feeding the, feeding the cycle here. So you guys understand me as a teammate.
Noise? Give us the noise.
It'd probably be more like a, like it'd be like if you guys have ever like seen the Eddie Murphy sketch about that, where it's like the deep guttural when you know it's good. Like, whoa. It'd be kind of like that for this one with Josh Allen.
Sounds like you just went tree knocking and found.
To Dominique's point, Bigfoot. That's what Josh Allen is. He's a big physical tree knocking Sasquatch. Absolutely. That we see in the wild. It's awesome, man.
Yeah, I think I'd go with something a little bit more high pitched. I think that's the offensive lineman in you, the offensive player in you. It's more like, yeah, this is our type of guy. I think mine would be more like, oh, it's like it's a shock. It's I didn't know they was making them like that. I did not know that there was another Cam Newton out in these streets with a better arm. It's incredibly terrifying.
No, I might go just on a like a little Magic Johnson, the way he was like spinning that ball. Oh, man, come on. 21 of 25. Alabaster, by the way, has just been like pleading with us to respect this question. But I'm respecting it, I feel like. I think we're all doing that because Josh Allen inspires these noises because I think he had the greatest offensive performance in NFL history.
Yeah,
like, we buried that lead, I think, to 1:03 p.m. Eastern. But can we all just say that confidently, or is there an argument there? Because 21 of 25, 308 yards, 5 touchdowns. He scored on every possession. They never had to kick field goal, never had to punt. Mitch Trubisky was the human victory cigar, taking a kneel down. So Josh Allen's perfect day didn't even have to be sullied by that. Like, no team in NFL history had ever gone a playoff game without, turning the ball over, doing all those things. It was insane in every possible way.
It's funny because I think that we, the Patriots, had they hung in this, we would have commended Bill Belichick and his great defensive scheming. But now, after that game, I'm kind of feeling like, man, the Patriots stunk. But is that fair? Like, I feel like maybe Josh Allen made them stink. And watching that game, it didn't feel like the Patriots were just bad. It just felt like there's not much analysis for it. It's the Pop Warner analysis. They got the big kid who's fast. Like, that's what it came down to. There is no scheme. There is no game plan. I don't know if you watch youth football, but every now and then, there's one kid that's better than everybody else. And it's just like the dearth in ability makes it such that there is no scheme to stop it. And that's what it felt like yesterday.
So I won't go too in-depth on this one as to alienate the non-Dragon Ball watching audience, but essentially what we've got between the Chiefs and the Bills this weekend is in every Dragon Ball story arc, there's this moment where one of the very powerful characters has found a new form and they've gone past and broken through, but they have difficulty controlling it. They haven't built up the stamina yet or the requisite experience to be able to do it. That is Josh Allen consistently as he goes through all this. He is trying to harness and wield this exemplary power, whereas on the other side, Patrick Mahomes is Goku. He's trained harder, longer at all this one. He's been able to master Ultra Instinct. And so going into this weekend, if you're asking me who I'm more confident in, it's Patrick Mahomes because he has demonstrated this consistently at the highest levels. And this season, he's had to find a different way to get back to that same point. And he successfully navigated it. He beat all the little bosses on the way up. And now he's going to beat Frieza or Jiren or Perfect Cell or whoever they throw at him.
I do want one of these guys to just make the Super Saiyan analogy as we further to exclude Dominique from our cultural communication, Gojo. I just want these guys to grow out their hair and actually dye it blonde.
Oh,
like,
God,
go full-on Super Saiyan hair. No one's done that. They should.
Juju Smith-Schuster got close. He had the blonde top there, and he's a guy he's versed enough in it, but like Odell doesn't really live in that world the same way I'm pretty sure Juju does rock with anime a little bit as a video game guy.
I think that's right.
I'm going to give him partial credit. I'm not sure about Odell.
Yeah, I mean, the right answer to this question is Patrick Mahomes, and for the reasons that you said. I think Josh Allen at his very best is actually better than Patrick Mahomes. I do think that Josh Allen, when he is doing everything well, he can do what Patrick Mahomes does and more, but he can't do it consistently. So, like, if Allen can reach 99 levels and Mahomes can only reach 95, the difference is after Allen reaches 99, he's going to give you a couple 60s. He's going to give you a couple 70s. He might even give you a 50, and then he'll give you an 80 again. That's not Patrick Mahomes. The Patrick Mahomes we've seen has been 99 from the time he stepped onto the field all the way up until this year, where he had a couple hiccups but was still pretty great. And even in their Super Bowl loss last year, we all left thinking Patrick Mahomes was somehow even better than he was before he went into that game. So I think you might be being a prisoner of the moment if you think that Josh Allen is the right answer to that question. However, if Saturday's Josh Allen shows up, nobody can beat them. And, I mean, that includes Goku and all the other little people. It's the only name I could come up with. The green one and the dude with the pants.
Yep. Love those characters.
Yeah, they're great characters. Integral to the Dragon Ball cycle.
Love them. And all the Dragon's balls.
So Josh Allen had 5 touchdowns, 4 incompletions, right? They're just all these stats you can throw out. What are we even doing here? But I guess the question is, in an actual, like, let's make these guys into the superhero analyses that I'm actually now very into, what can Josh do that Mahomes can't? Is it just the size thing that is that difference maker, Dominique, to you?
I think it's the size. I think it's the the running ability off of the size. I think that is another level. His arm strength is – Patrick Mahomes has a very strong arm, but it feels like a strong arm in a different way, or at least he uses it in a different way. So Mahomes, you see the strength of his arm with cross field, like deep balls, high arcing deep balls. I imagine he's capable to throw those zips. Josh Allen is capable of doing those high arcing deep balls also. But Josh Allen – at what is he, 6'6", 6'5", something like that? He's capable of standing in the pocket and throwing darts to every corner and orifice of the field in a way that Patrick Mahomes does not. And you see Mahomes do this rollout thing. So many of his highlights are those rollouts. Josh Allen can do that. But Josh Allen can also do the Ben Roethlisberger, which is like stand in the pocket like a skyscraper and push people off of you and throw a dart while someone is hanging on your body. So I think that he has, like, in his quiver all of the arrows that Mahomes has and maybe one or two more that if he can shoot them all at the right time, he's special. But I think in what comes with having all of those arrows is you never meet a situation that you think can't be solved with you shooting one. And that's what goes wrong with Josh Allen a lot more in the past than recently is he's like, oh, man, we're getting pressure. You know what I got? Oh, the crossfield right. interception arrow. We just don't see that out of Mahomes nearly as often.
Yeah, no. Gojo, when you have 10 hammers, I suppose everything does seem like a nail. You know, I guess that's the dynamic here.
It is like,
good teamwork.
Swing and a miss.
There we go. Hey, listen, you know what? The point is you tried. Alabaster?
Just citing American aphorisms.
Got a football question for you guys. I mean, we were talking about this game, and I think rightfully so, essentially like Chiefs-Bills is an AFC championship game. But the rested one seed is on the other side playing the Bengals. Is Chiefs-Bills really the AFC championship game, or do you give?
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, we don't. Yep. Yeah, dumb, like dumb question, I know Titans fans are going to continue to internalize this disrespect, but like you saw what all these people can do. Like you guys don't have that. Like, and you're a very good football team and deserving and earned the one seed. But like this is I don't want to slight myself, but this kind of feels like in 2012 when Alabama and Georgia played in the SEC championship game, and then the winner got to play us, and we like walked out there and thought we were ready, but weren't actually ready in that spot here. That feels like what it's going to be on this side. They're just built a different stuff. Like the Bills decided, hey, we're just going to build the Chiefs, but with a quarterback who's a legitimate battering ram. Like Dominique, the fact that you can say, and many people, he is Cam Newton like rushing ability and size in that regard, and it's not at all overstating. Like that would have been sacrilege for so many other people, but he is a legitimate ball carrier and a guy that you can use in the exact same ways.
He had cornerbacks breakdancing in the open field. Like he had the juke move, and my man was back on his hands switching up. Like I was worried about his knee. Like the. I don't know. Josh Allen's special, man. Like he's special. He has the highest end of anybody, I think, in the league. But he can't harness it because Goku, Super Saiyans, Dragon Balls, it's difficult.
Nailed it. Dominique, this is the Japanime expertise you've come to appreciate from the guy who dresses Pikachu and did not know what Pikachu even evolved into, which was embarrassing for everybody.
I knew. I just wanted to give you a chance.
Who does he evolve into?
I mean, don't go put ahead. Me on the spot. It's rude. It's disrespectful. How dare you?
I feel so shamed that like that answer was so readily accessible in my brain. Of course, I'm just sitting
here up begging on MLK begging Day,
begging to yell Raichu out here.
Oh, Raichu?
Yeah.
What's the Raichu?
Yeah.
No, Raichu is the Pikachu evolution. Right, after
you get
the
I can feel people clicking off of this as we delve deeper into next topic, please.
I do this show for two people, and it's you two.
Dominic, actually, this next question a bit is for you. I know you've long been a fan of teams sort of metaphorically going for it and trying to win a championship in their small window. And so will you view this Rams season as a failure if they lose to the Cardinals tonight?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there's – I think the Rams would. I think anyone who came into the season would agree that it's absolutely a failure. But for Matthew Stafford, more than anyone else, is he was brought in, which is the so interesting thing about the Matthew Stafford trade was they went and got a guy who has no playoff wins in order to help them get deep in the playoffs and win a Super Bowl. That's an interesting dynamic, an interesting choice is like you tend to want to bring someone in to do a job that they've shown the ability to do the job. It's not fair to like put wins on the quarterback's resume, but it's just funny. And he's been really,
it is very funny.
He's been inconsistent lately. So there's a lot on him and there is no future. Like they have no chance. I think they have a fifth and a seventh in the draft next year.
Yes.
Like,
no,
it's now.
Look.
So yes, it's a failure.
In the world of sports gas bagging, we have to have a code. Right. And if we declare that a team is going all in on a season, we can't just back off of that and be like, well, you know, if they don't win it, though, they're, you know, no, they went all in. They went all in. And if we don't keep talking about how they went all in, there's a lot less that I find interesting about the Rams. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you guys. The existential, oh God, there's that word that we always say.
Yeah, that's
I was just
no,
glad it wasn't
I did it ironically, ha, 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 that was a self-reference. it was not. But Gojo, I don't know, man. Like, is there a valid argument against what Dominique and I are basically trying to argue there?
No, I don't know. I am always impressed now as someone who is so far removed from actually playing sports, our capacity and our willingness and, like, I don't know, some of it feels like a necessity to get up and lie to ourselves and everyone else about the situation. Like, hearing Matthew Stafford claim all week that this isn't any bigger of a deal and it's not, like, there's no more pressure on him in this one. Like, and I don't know, I remember being on the other side of this where you legitimately convince yourself of these things, that your approach is so one day at a time, one week at a time, that you don't get to a certain point where something is more important than everything else that you've done. And man, right, wrong, or indifferent, we have arrived at that point for Matthew Stafford, because there aren't going to be many of these left if they fail in this instance, because I have a feeling there's going to be some hard truths for that team on the other side of this season. And for Matthew Stafford, not a ton more opportunities to do this at the high level with teams like this.
Yep.
Go ahead. Alabaster wrote Matthew Schaub and crossed out Schaub and put Stafford on there.
Oh, man.
Because Matthew Schaub Stafford led the league in INTs and pick sixes this season. So,
I mean, there is that. There's not much more to this, but you're right. The only thing I would, like, disagree with is, you know, you're lying when you're saying it. Like, I guess maybe you have the mental strength to convince yourself that you're actually no more pressure in this situation. But anytime I told a reporter something like that, and anytime I see someone saying that, I'm like, you know, that's bull. Like you absolutely know that that's nonsense. You are aware. You didn't just wake up on this planet. You know that playoff games are more significant. You know that you've never won a playoff game. You know they traded away everything in order to get you there. You know the quarterback that was there before you led them to a Super Bowl and lost. You know this matters. So, like, I don't know.
No, we are all, even outside of sports, we're all taking it like 1 year at a time, right? Like, we're not thinking about a day.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about my contract. I'm thinking about what's coming up in 6 months, my vacation plans. Yes, all of that. I'm doing all of that.
Oh, man. All right. I'm done with Matt Stafford and the Rams.
By the way, in this football game, you all have a chance to actually appreciate the truly impressive old football player. It is not Tom Brady. It is 40-year-old Andrew Whitworth playing left tackle in a human football game at 40 years old. Like, I mean, regardless of what happens, bow down and respect it.
You're going Andrew Whitworth. I'm going Eric Weddle. Eric Weddle was just brought up off the street, 2 years removed. He's like 42, I think, was just coaching high school football, and they bring him back to shore up the Cardinals secondary, which is just incredible. Rams secondary.
One of my favorite Whitworth things, Gojo, is that Whitworth was he was discussing retirement on Hard Knocks in like 2013. 10 years ago.
It's incredible, man. I mean, I think he's got a bunch of kids, so it would make sense why he wants to keep making money. Like, as Philip Rivers found out, kids are expensive. As you guys both probably know, a lot better than I could ever possibly even begin to fathom. Every day I think about something that parents do that I'm just like, I have no idea how you people live. Everyone was doing last night during the Cowboys game that Skip Bayless meme where it's you standing outside your parents' room at 1:45 telling them you threw up. And I'm just like, man, parents, that's got to scare the ever-loving hell out of you when your little kid shows up like a shadow breathing over you telling them you puke.
You get used to it.
Oh, God.
You are the expensive kid. You realize that, right?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I remember doing that.
So I walked up to my mom
and I was like, I'm sorry.
But Gojo is in his parents' home in Scottsdale, incidentally. And I just love the idea that sometime over this week, he's going to walk into Mike Golic Sr.'s room and just be like, Dad, I puked on myself.
I threw up. Again, Mike, Jesus.
All right, man.
Guys, you ready to play a game?
Who? Cool.
That game is, that's upside down. What are the chances? And our first topic, this is a game where we'll give you topics and events and you tell us the chances they actually happen. Our first topic is, what are the chances Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback for the Eagles next season?
Man. That's by the way, the sound that I think Eagles fans would make if Jalen Hurts just showed up in their room right now. Just like, oh.
50-50, mm-hmm. I guess. I'll give him a coin toss. I'm sure there is. I haven't heard this, but I'm sure there's a Minshew contingent. They have three draft picks that I imagine one of them will get spent on a quarterback. Their problem is none of those draft picks or no quarterback seems like an immediate day one starter. But once the hype train gets going, they'll convince themselves that someone is worth a pick. And, I mean, Jalen Hurts was not impressive yesterday in that blowout loss. And there's no – he's given them no reason not to look for somebody else, but he's been good enough for them, I think, to be fine with him as a quarterback. So, coin toss it.
So, Nick Sirianni, Mike, is saying that I feel really good with what we have in place right here at the quarterback position, which is what you would say if you felt really good about your quarterback. And also, if you're trying to convince other teams as you acquire another quarterback that you don't want to pay as much for the quarterback you're trying to acquire.
Yeah, that's also sounding like what Jerry Jones said, that he wasn't going to talk about making any decisions about firing Mike McCarthy, even though we know he's probably going to fire Mike McCarthy. Like, I'm with Dominique, and most of this is just because of the, like, what he mentioned, the quarterback pre-draft hype train. I'll go 25% on this. There's also going to be some veterans available in the marketplace, and when you've got three first-round picks, you're in play for all of that stuff. You could potentially package that because you've got an offensive line that you can sell to a quarterback that's coming over here. Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert are both legitimate weapons in that skill group. Like, there's enough reason for me to believe you can go and explore your options and maybe be successful. They'd be fine if they ended up lining up under center with him. They'd be a perfectly good football team next year, but it wasn't good enough to say that you deserve to be the sole proprietor of
that spot. He was a little bit too good, too, because if I am to believe what you're saying is that they believe that they're close, which I don't think are. So, like, I think it would be a mistake for them to chase one of these quarterbacks, one of these, like, veteran quarterbacks. I think it would be a mistake for a quarterback to go there and probably a mistake for them to send away all their draft picks and hope that Russell Wilson is going to take them over the top or Aaron Rodgers is going to take them over the top. I don't see that happening, honestly.
Yeah, I'm going to just go with 0%. Let's just stop beating around the bush. Okay. It does feel like the Eagles are going to be in the market for, like, some name. And Jalen Hurts, congratulations. You've had, you know, you were a starting quarterback. There was always that.
Got his job taken so many times. All right, what's next?
All right, got one more here. What are the chances Fitzmagic brought the Bills luck in their wild card game? And we have a photo here.
Yeah.
So you got to respect this. You guys have to respect this.
I don't.
Because Ryan Fitzpatrick is shirtless for the podcast audience. He is wearing both his beard and his chest beard. They're all out. And
cheered.
He's posing with Bills fans. And the reason he is doing that. And he's also having that. So the reason why you have to respect this, though, is because he is technically a member of the Washington football team right now. And he's just out there at a Bills game. Just like, yeah. This is more fun than doing anything related to my technical still employer. So, yeah, 100%.
How many teams has he played for?
I mean, he's had 17 career seasons.
Wow.
I would say.
And this is his first playoff game. That's impressive.
This is, I mean, unless he's snuck into previous ones. Yeah, in disguise.
Which, like, again, at this point, like, he's been around for 17 seasons. I was thinking about this relative to him and Tom Brady. He was around before we could put everything on social media. So there's a chance that he just showed up and was kind of like anonymously at one of these spots and managed to pull it off. So I'll say on this one, what the hell, 100% chance. I'll go with Pablo on this one. This seems like something inherently Billsian.
Fusion dancing it, Gojo.
0%. Write it, please. 0%. I don't believe in magic. Look at you guys doing Dragon Ball thing. You're too far on your left hand.
Yeah, Pablo, bring your one hand down and your other one up.
Jeez. Oh, that's this one.
For the podcast audience, as Pablo would say, Pablo is wasting your time once again.
Fusion ho!
He's doing some sort of anime fusion. Hey, look, it's Pablo. Whoa! He was at the game too. Nice job.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Good Photoshop.
I don't believe in magic, and I certainly don't believe that Fitzpatrick is bringing anyone any magic. I don't know that that's the quarterback you want in your stadium if you're trying to advance in the playoffs.
Wait. You're all out on magic in general?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I'm out, completely out on magic. I'm not with it. I'm not.
That seems overly confident.
I'm going to send David Blaine to your house.
I'm good.
Change that tune real quick.
Send him over here. We can square up. I'm not afraid of his illusions.
By the way, like, Ryan, it would make sense, too, like, because Ryan Fitzpatrick is the perfect, like,
sleight of hand quarterback. Yes, you're right. He convinces people that there's a good quarterback, and then when you get closer, you're like, oh, fooled you.
He walked so that Josh Allen could fly in a Buffalo Bills uniform.
Yes.
Because the entire Ryan Fitzpatrick experience is massive highs followed by weird, inconsistent lows. And as Dominique described before, that has been the Josh Allen experience so far, with highs higher than any Ryan Fitzpatrick high could have ever hied, like by a thousandfold here.
Yeah.
But still, it's the same basic business model at quarterback.
No, it's not.
That's a very good point. Totally.
No. It's medium highs with very, very depressing lows, which is not what Josh Allen has become. How dare you? That's so rude.
What are you talking?
You think all those Bills fans who are happy to see him there without his shirt on, you think they'd be happy to see him on the field with a jersey on? Nah. Like, y'all need to stop with this Fitzmagic foolishness.
I mean, does Ryan Fitzpatrick have a play as memorable as Josh Allen's 30 minus 30 yard sack pants pooping in the playoffs 2 years ago?
That's
a low that's so low that I think it's stuck in our heads forever until Josh undoes that, and it's why we all pick Patrick Mahomes over him. If we're really honest with ourselves, it was that 30 yard pants pooping.
Okay.
It was 30 yards of poop all the way back to that sack.
It was a lot of poop. I mean, it's remarkable. Like, I don't remember a rebrand as stunning as Josh Allen. Honestly,
Brussels
like
sprouts.
All of the nerds, and let's call ourselves out here. All of the smart, quote unquote, smart nerds. We saw the numbers. He had never completed like 50% of his passes at like any level of football. We all laughed at him. We all mocked all the people who said, you know, look at this physical marvel. And we're all just making weird erotic panic noises.
He's right. He had the greatest improvement of any quarterback in the history of football. Like, statistically, from the, I guess, what was that, his second season to his third season?
Yep.
Where he just had a ridiculous jump. Like, that was unprecedented. And this year, he had a little regression, which is reasonable. No one could keep up that stuff. But he still seems to be, at his core, the good quarterback, not the bad one that we saw for the first couple seasons.
Yes. Also, Ryan Fitzpatrick, just to be clear about what he was, because I've given you guys a lot of time to just totally make fun of him. He was an avatar for the city of Buffalo itself. He is not merely, you know, resembling Josh Allen in many ways that I agree with Michael Jr. about. He is the city. He is a guy who has been crapped on, who has been left behind by the modernization, allegedly, of the larger football economy. And there he is, shirtless, a man of the people. He was all of Buffalo. He was all of the city of Buffalo.
I don't think that any of Buffalo would identify with him. Like, let's be honest about who he is. The reason why you decide to be his Culligan man is because he's a nerd like you at heart. Like, he's not Buffalo. He's a star college quarterback at the most competitive university in the country, and then he just meanders around the league collecting checks for mediocre play. And like, I can't imagine that people in Buffalo are like, man, we got this charmed existence where we can roll around and not be good, but still somehow be celebrated. And also be an underdog who went to Harvard and played quarterback. Like, there's nothing about him with the exception of the beard and his complexion that says Buffalo.
I mean, I feel like beard.
Isn't that enough?
Yeah,
that's
95%.
Right. Okay, I stand corrected. I'm done. Yeah,
like
I'm wrong.
Like, it could be, Buffalo, North Dakota,
giant beard,
like,
and he's white.
Minnesota,
like, pretty dead on. Honestly,
For as many years as he's been in the league and how much money he's made, I wonder what it would compare to, like, someone else in the league for that long. Like, how many games has he played? How good was he really? Like, that's where I think the comparisons to Buffalo, like, miss. Because I assume the people of Buffalo consider themselves, like, hardworking, earn everything, blue collar, salt of the earth. That ain't Fitzmagic. Fitzmagic been meandering around the league, collecting checks for, like, not being that good and occasionally showing up and being amazing for, like, a quarter.
Something tells me that the way Dominique said hardworking means that he does not believe that Buffalo itself is particularly hardworking.
No, I just think that when people say that, it's like, y'all not any harder working than anybody else. Like, it's funny because it comes out of places like Pittsburgh and Buffalo, but actually, like, New York City, the place that most of them despise, like, it's the hardest working place anywhere, like you hear the city never sleeps, like go to New York.
You're damn right.
People are working
damn right.
at all hours of the day.
Yeah.
Go to Buffalo. The city shuts down. And yeah, that was a slip. I don't know.
That was 30 yards of poop is what that
the
was.
The city shuts down at 8:45. Like, y'all not working all night? What are we talking
if
about?
I can't get delivery after midnight, how yeah. hard is your city really working?
Not as hard as New York. Like, let's
New
be
York.
Real.
New York is the hardest working city.
And no one from New York ever, no one from New York ever described New York City like, man, we're a hard working city. But really, in actuality, of all the cities in the country, New York works the hardest.
Absolutely right.
This is
I'm embarrassed.
Where we don't really work that hard. A lot of problems.
I live in Connecticut, mostly insurance.